Our next guest has a lot to discuss. Andrew Holden is media commentator, formerly editor of The Press, formerly editor-in-chief of The Age in Melbourne. Well, what a turnaround. There is a buyer for stuff. It is clearly not NZME that was fighting to continue exclusive negotiations and was rejected by the courts. It is a management buyout pretty much by the chief executive of stuff, Andrew.
It's just extraordinary, isn't it? And I kind of wonder whether we're ever going to have a normal week in media, and clearly that's not the case. But in this case, Sinead Boucher, the chief executive of stuff, has, or will, as of Monday, own the company for the princely sum of $1 with a couple of little elements within it. And credit must be given to Tim Murphy from Newsroom, who tipped a management buyout or talked about it some time ago. So it's an extraordinary achievement.
It's an achievement. It comes with many complexities and potential liabilities. Let's first look at how the deal is shaped. As we read yesterday when this news broke, about 24 hours ago, a little bit longer than that, Nine will keep ownership of the Petone printing plant and lease it back. It will also pretty much make off with the proceeds over time of the sale of Stuff Fibre, Andrew.
Well, it will. I mean, the Stuff Fibre one is an interesting one because it's the way they've structured it in that Nine Entertainment will take 25% of the purchase price right now, but then the other 75% can be paid back to them over the next 3 years. Suggests to me it's a bit of a sweetheart deal, that in fact they've done everything they can to make this work for Sinead and the rest of the Stuff organisation and give them a bit of breathing space. So they've got a portion of that cash available. They do have to pay it back, but at least there's money in the pot to keep them going. The Petone element's also a curious one. You kind of wonder why the Petone printing plant, and they haven't given any information out of that, whether there's greater value as a redevelopment site for Nine Entertainment down the track if printing stops. Certainly the printing plant down in Christchurch for the Press is the more modern and arguably the better facility. So between the two of them, they see some value in that remaining with Nine Entertainment. Whether it's a bit of cash flow from the lease, I'm not entirely sure, but there's certainly some core elements to it that are most interesting.
Well, that could be the capital costs of trying to take that on would have been the deal breaker. And I don't know what your soundings are, Andrew, but from mine, there was a belief that it was this or there was a closure of stuff. It was certainly the expectation of at least some staff. Was it your understanding that Patrick Smalley article picking an end of May closure was very much in play?
Yeah, was it closure or was that the date that was proposed by Nine Entertainment to NZME, and they turned that around and said, oh, it's going to be closed if we don't complete the deal? There's certainly some question marks around that. I mean, I think what we can reasonably say is that Nine Entertainment, as you would expect in the COVID environment, have seen the value of stuff plummet quite dramatically. They're going to take a further hit in their books of some $48 million in New Zealand as a write-down. So I think the reality is that they wanted done with the New Zealand business. They were looking for a buyer that it was acceptable to them, and they've seen real value in making that the local. They owned the CEO here and the staff potentially of owning it. So for them, it's a good way to get out of it. And certainly as far as Sinead and the rest of stuff, I've rarely seen a purchase celebrated with such positivity, including from arrivals. I mean, both NZME and Todd Scott at NBR, who'd hoped to buy it, they're all highly complimentary and wishing her the best, which is a significant feel-good element, even if it doesn't bring particular dollars immediately.
She's spoken extensively to Checkpoint last night. We weren't able to nab her in time. She was about to speak to staff pretty much as this was breaking, and she's given quite a full interview to Checkpoint. But what is your take on exactly the challenges ahead, how she's going to structure this and any staff shareholding in it, and also is she going to need, and is there perhaps one out and one back, a fairly benevolent potential investor?
Well, it certainly opens up all those opportunities now that it's a purely New Zealand company. I mean, I think from the political element, it makes it very easy for the government to provide targeted financial support. They've still got a pot there available to them, and they're well aware that the TV and radio stations benefit most from the first bit. And NZME through the New Zealand Herald would have done quite well out of the subscription element because of their digital subscriptions. Stuff missed out on all those. So there's a fantastic opportunity for Sinead to talk to the government about what that financial support will look like for Stuff to give them some more breathing space. The next question then, of course, is exactly as you say. What's going to be the ownership structure of this? She's talked about getting staff involved and making shares available to them. There'll clearly be some local investors who may be interested. We might see it turn more into a social enterprise where, in fact, the purpose of the organisation is more important than the profit. And you don't have investors on a share market who are just expecting returns through dividends with no particular concern for what the organisation does. So that may well turn around and be quite different. And to me, the other, you know, core element into her thinking that sits with that is her comment that she's looking at building a charter of editorial independence for Stuff to have. So again, this is something that Fairfax had for many, many years to protect the independence of mastheads like The Age and the Sydney Morning Herald. So she's clearly looking at ensuring that whoever comes in as an investor or owns any portion of it clearly understands that the purpose of this organisation is journalism and the independence of that journalism must be protected.
I've heard some names speculated on, and I use the word benevolent not because they're not business people necessarily with a good deal of money, but because their interest may well be a genuine interest in securing a significant New Zealand media organisation and, you know, a genuine sense of duty towards ensuring there's a plurality of journalism here and a healthy journalism here. Speculation only, but we could think of people who may or may not be willing to be part of that. The other issue, of course, is they've had some good support for their donations, you know, support our journalism donations, shout out that they made. But in such a small country, that or a membership similar to The Guardian overseas, we're still talking very small numbers up against the costs of running a company.
But they've got an opportunity, I think, here to do things in quite an innovative fashion. So when you go back to her first newspaper, The Press in Christchurch, where she started her journalism career, for decades and decades that was owned by a number of Canterbury families before they sold out to INL many years ago. There's nothing to stop you going to the Canterbury community and saying, we're interested in investors in the Canterbury newsroom, whether that's the physical press being home delivered to you, but we're looking at investors for that portion of the business, and you can buy a stake in that, and that will protect the local journalism available into your area. You could duplicate that in a Wellington for the Don Post or a Waikato or anywhere else. You can take elements of the business, like Stuff Circuit, they're fantastic but relatively expensive investigative thing, and look for sponsors just for that group. And so we're looking for people to put in, you know, a couple of million or 5 million, what it is, to sponsor that because you believe in what this portion of the business does. So it doesn't have to be a one-size-fits-all. They've got this extraordinary flexibility to do really innovative ways of looking at the business and finding support for it.
And she's the executive for it. She was early in the, off the ground in digital and a leader in the introduction of digital in the early 2000s, but also in more recent years, Stuff has branched into like the provision of fibre and it bought Neighbourly, I think, didn't it? The hyperlocal arm. It's sort of leveraged itself as a platform and done deals with other kinds of commercial partners. So the experience is there. I think everyone's going to wish them the best of luck on it. The next question is there any sort of rescue coming for the likes of MediaWorks? Because that's a lot of jobs going, mainly from the sales and radio arms, we understand. But how many cuts can you put into a company?
Well, that's right. I mean, that's the tragedy for the other businesses around it, is that they're still taking the hit. So, again, as you say, MediaWorks yesterday announcing a significant cut to their radio staff, looking at about 130 people to go. So they're still under extreme pressure. The interesting element there is that they're not targeting the TV station at this point, and that's arguably where they're bleeding the cash from. it also begs the question of NZME, the New Zealand Herald Company. Where do they go now? I mean, they've spent so many years focused on this merger as being the silver bullet for them to turn themselves into the powerhouse of journalism within New Zealand. That's now fundamentally gone. So there's a really interesting question for that organisation to put all that aside and think about what is it that will allow them to survive and continue to be a core element within the media in this country. So, you know, a simple change like this, perhaps it's wrong to describe it as simple, but it triggers all these waves, doesn't it, right across the industry to say, if this is now out of play and has a relatively calm future, if you like, for the next 12 months, 2 years, what does it mean to the others? What are they now going to do to support themselves?
Yes. You do wonder how much longer for some the... you know, the viability lasts before potentially more drastic actions. And as again, we're not going to know finally what Nine's intentions were it not to settle this deal. But I certainly am aware of a belief that closure was believed by some of the staff anyway to be the next step. We shall, the history will be written in time. You want to note the
Well, it will. And just on the history, I did have to go and Google it because I was there at the time when Fairfax bought INL, as it was then, which at that point was 45% controlled by Rupert Murdoch, although a very absent owner at that time. He certainly wasn't as directional as he was with many other companies. That was announced April of 2003, and Fairfax buying it for $1.2 billion. Oh, so wow. Here we are, 17 years later, and the sale is $1. You know, to be fair, Fairfax did extremely well out of that purchase. They made a lot of money, particularly in those early years. And when David Kirk came in, through his ability and his personal connections, of course, he was able to buy TradeMe also for $1 billion and do particularly well out of it. But it's remarkable when you look at the history, isn't it? The changes, the amounts that were being bounced around in the early 2000s within this industry to now what's being talked about in 2020.
Well, I'm trying to remember the value of TVNZ. I remember at one point being north of $1 billion. I don't know when the latest assessment of that was done, but it has just been the story of organisations across the board with what has happened to the business model. Really only a minute left to quickly note the Voyagers. None of these awards at the moment are being held in person, of course. Do you want to mention just a couple of that stood out to you?
Well, I do. I mean, I was particularly interested in best coverage of a major news event. You would think from last year that would likely go to one of the media organisations for the coverage of the Christchurch terror attack. So it was really wonderful to see Barbara Drever from One News TVNZ win for her coverage of the Samoan measles crisis, because that essentially, I think from memory, she had that pretty much solo. It was a great result. And the other one I wanted to do a shout out to is the editorial executive of the year, Annabelle Lee Mather, a quite remarkable groundbreaker around Māori current affairs, has done a fantastic work over many years, and I'd like to see her recognised in this way.
Thanks so much, Andrew Holden, our media commentator.